65% of all children fall into one of those three categories at birth. And a little later on, during the toddler years, many of the remaining 35% eventually develop into one of those three personality types.
Welcome to Focus on the Family. I'm Mike Trout, and that was the voice of our host, Dr. James Dobson. Those comments were made on our last broadcast as we began a conversation about his book, Parenting Isn't for Cowards. What are the three personality types he referenced? Well, we described them yesterday as we went through the responses to an extensive survey we conducted with 35,000 parents, moms and dads, just like you who listen to this broadcast. The three categories were the shy child, the compliant youngster, and the strong-willed child. And today we'll learn more about these personality differences as Dr. Dobson and I continue to discuss his book. This is a recorded conversation, and at the end of our time together today, I'm going to make available his book along with a cassette of our series on this subject. This is an excellent reference for every parent. Let's go ahead and listen again.
You know, Mike, there is no better way to learn a subject than to either have to speak on it or write about it. Mm. I learn far more from writing my books than anyone who reads them because I get so deeply involved in it, and especially in this context where we had masses of data from 35,000 parents as the background for this particular book. It was very instructive for me, and I am full up to my eyeballs with it, as people can probably tell.
Well, we spent day one giving an overview of the book, and the subtitle is Dealing Confidently with the Frustrations of Child-Rearing. And you talked about the reasons why you wrote the book. And then the types of temperaments in children, you outlined the three types that I think were identified in the New York Longitudinal Study. Is that
That's
correct?
Right. Yes.
Maybe you can give some more details on those.
Well, that's an important place to begin this subject because that was the premise for the study that we conducted. We were talking about this New York Longitudinal Study where they followed youngsters for 30 years and attempted to assess what were they like at birth and what characteristics were evident there that may distinguish children from one another when they come into the world. Mm. And what they found, surprisingly, and in contradiction to Freud and Watson and some of the other classical psychologists and psychiatrists through the ages, what they found is that 65% of all children can be classified in one of three categories. They are either easy. By that, they meant they don't have feeding problems and they sleep through the night and they just fit in with the family. The second category is difficult. Those youngsters that just are screaming in the nursery, you know, in the delivery room, they're unhappy and they just hard to raise from the early days. They don't sleep well. They don't eat well. You change their diapers and they're mad. You're 10 minutes late with the dinner and they're mad. You know, they're just difficult children. And I call them strong-willed. Chess and Thomas called them difficult.
Our first daughter, Rebecca, was born breech. And I remember being in the labor room with Nancy when the nurse came in to see how far along she was, how dilated she was. And next thing I knew, a leg had kicked out. And it just kind of gave us an early indication of what kind of a personality we were dealing with there.
You remember when I first wrote on this subject, I talked about the strong-willed child scratching his initials on the walls before he's born, because mama knows something different is coming there. Well, the third category that Chess and Thomas talked about is the shy child. Now, I've been talking about the strong-willed and the compliant child for many years. I have not talked much about the shy child. That's the basis for another study I'd like to do later. Mm. But we ask our mailing list, those people who are our friends who correspond with us, to complete a questionnaire. Do you remember that?
Sure do.
Extensive questionnaire. We asked parents to categorize their children into one of five classifications, and here are the five. Number one is very strong-willed. Number two is strong-willed. Number three is average. Number four is compliant. And number five is very compliant. Then we had an extensive questionnaire, about a five-page series of questions that we asked about those children, not only in the early days, but as they went through adolescence and young adulthood. And we asked parents to complete this document and return it to us. And Mike, as you know, 35,000 parents did so. I mean, you put 35,000 records together and it fills a warehouse. We had data that you would not believe. And my good friend, Dr. Mike Williamson, assisted me in the analysis of these data. They were key punched, and we analyzed the data at the University of Southern California Computer Center. And new information, information that I believe is in no book anywhere on the face of the earth, because psychologists have not admitted that there were temperaments at the moment of birth. You know, they haven't admitted that we differ in regard to characteristics of our personality. But information came by the boatload, more than I could put in 10 books.
When our children were much younger, and we have three girls, we were in a shopping center in Chicago, and we only had two girls at that time. And one of them, actually both of them, were very upset with Nancy and I. We were on the second level of a two-story shopping center walking along, and they were trailing about 10 feet behind us, just getting angrier and angrier. And finally, one of them, and I think she was four or five at the time, blurted out at the top of her lungs throughout the shopping center, it could be heard, "If I were you, I wouldn't treat me this way." And we knew, the other one was just following along, seething, but not vocal about it. We knew at that time that we had two very different types of personalities on our hands.
And you know, every parent knows that. If you have two or three or four or five children, you can instantly identify with this. You know, well, Jack is my strong-willed child, and he's very different from Sam. And it's not just masculine and feminine. One of the things that we found is that strong-willed boys outnumber strong-willed girls by a small margin, only 5%.
Huh.
So it's not that boys are much more inclined to be tough and girls are inclined to be soft, you know, sugar and spice and everything nice. That's baloney. There are an awful lot of strong-willed girls out there as well.
Snakes and snails and puppy dog tails, the other rest of that.
And it's they're both wrong.
Yes.
The other half of that is compliant girls outnumber compliant boys by a small margin of about 6%. So there is a slight sex-related characteristic here. Boys tend to be a little more strong-willed, girls a little more compliant, but there's tremendous overlap in those distributions, and you can get either characteristic in either sex.
Well, if you've got more compliant in the girl side and more strong-willed on the male side, when you put it all together, which temperament wins out?
In terms of the incidence, the number of cases? Well, we had five categories, and we dropped the middle three. So we're only looking at the very compliant and the very strong-willed.
Okay.
When you just look at extremes, the strong-willed outnumber the compliant 2-1.
And
isn't that interesting?
1,000 parents out there said, well,
yes, true. There are twice as many very strong-willed kids. That's one of the conclusions of the book, Mike, that if you've got one of these youngsters who is hammering away on your authority every day and you feel under siege from 18 months of age on, and during the adolescent years he is saying, no, I want to do it my way, and your inclination is to feel, I have been had. Why couldn't I have had a kid like everybody else's children? Why do I have to have one that's unpleasant, that won't cooperate, that won't go along with the program? The truth of the matter is, this is parenthood. He is not an exception. He is more common than the other kind of child. And most parents have one. The best of parents have one. Many parents blame this on birth order. They say, well, he's my firstborn child. You know how that is. Mm-hmm. Or he's my middle child. Or, well, he's that way because he's the baby. We found that birth order didn't have a whole lot to do with it.
Well, when you've got a second child and a third child, it just stands to reason that you also have some additional variables in there. You have two parents that are a little more experienced in the situation as far as handling a child. You have a child who is not an only child, but now they have a sibling. So there are all kinds of characteristics that enter in there.
You know what often occurs in regard to strong-willed children who are born in the second, third, or fourth position in the family is that there is a phenomenon that Dr. Bruce Baldwin referred to as sibling drift. You remember that?
Yes,
There's a tendency for parents to get tired.
Uh-huh.
They gave it all they had on the firstborn child, And the second and the third and the fourth comes along, and you just don't have the energy to make him work and make him mind and make him toe the line. And the parent's attitude toward discipline and responsibility changes with the passage of time and with the arrival of new children.
Boy, that sounds very dangerous to me.
It is.
Yes.
It is very risky.
Boy, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. Uh-huh. I think that's in chapter 7 or 8. As far as the strong-willed child is concerned, and you just indicated that there are more strong-willed children than compliant children, is that child going to be a major problem all the way through to adulthood and then even beyond?
Mike, that is a magnificent question, and it is one that, as far as I know, no one has ever asked or no one has ever attempted to answer before. Let me speak to you and to the parents who are listening right now. You have, we'll say, a very tough kid who is now 2 years of age or three or four. And you have one of those youngsters who you get tears in the eyes when you think about because they're just so sweet and so cooperative. As you look ahead, what can you expect? The answers that we came up with in regard to what happens to those two kids as they go through adolescence and young adulthood have been fascinating. Let me share it. First of all, the compliant child has an advantage academically. He makes better grades in high school. He makes better grades all the way through elementary, junior high, high school, college, graduate school if he goes that far.
Now, why would you suppose that is?
Because he goes along with the program.
He doesn't fight.
He doesn't fight. The teacher stands up and says, read four chapters for the test tomorrow and complete the answers in the back of each chapter and have that ready to turn in with your report on Monday. And he goes and does it. And a strong-willed child says, fully on you.
This is dumb.
I'm not about to do it. You know, his temperament does not lend itself to the cooperative agreement to study and do what he's told in school.
I'm beginning to remember that I may have been strong-willed.
Yeah, I think your memory has kind of gotten a little foggy back there, Michael. Interestingly, the compliant child has an advantage socially. He has more friends. Why do you think?
He needs friends? He needs the affirmation?
I think so. He's more vulnerable to people. He needs the approval of his parents, and he needs the approval of his friends. The strong-willed child, on the other hand, can be more selfish. He can demand his own way, and he gets angry. He's challenging everyone. He's not only challenging his teachers and his parents and the policeman on the corner and just about everybody else in his life, but he's also challenging his friends, and he gets mad at them when they don't do things the right way. And a very strong-willed child sometimes has some rather severe social problems in the developmental years.
He obviously alienates people with his personality.
That often occurs. Now, we're speaking in generalities.
Sure.
You know, there are exceptions, and there are people right now who are saying, my strong-willed child was all-school king or queen, you know, and I understand that. There are those youngsters. But in broad terms, the strong-willed child has some social problems. Now we come to one of the reasons for those social problems that you and I didn't talk about just now, and that has to do with self-esteem. Which of those youngsters, strong-willed or compliant, just on the face of it, would you think would be more inclined to have low self-esteem?
I would say, I suppose, the compliant child.
I think I would have said that, too, because he's vulnerable. You know, he's more sensitive. He's hurt more easily.
Seems a little more insecure.
Yeah, you would think so, because when people say things about him, he needs people. We've already agreed to that, and that is likely to take its toll. We didn't find it. The strong-willed child is the one that has, in some cases, major problems with self-worth and self-esteem.
Well, if the strong-willed child has a lower self-esteem threshold, how is he impacted or influenced by peers?
Well, that was one of the major questions that we put on the questionnaire that we were interested in, Mike, because I had said in the original Focus on the Family film series in 1978 that I thought the strong-willed child would be more independent from the peer group than the compliant child. I said that the same characteristic that caused a three-year-old to stamp his little foot and say no to his parent might also cause a 15- or a 16-year-old to say no to the peer group when they offered him drugs. That's what I anticipated. You know, that willingness to put himself in opposition to the people around him at home, I thought would also lend itself to independence during the adolescent years, but we didn't find it again. The strong-willed child, the very strong-willed child, is far more peer-dependent than the compliant child. I mean, the gap between them was a mile wide. The strong-willed child is more rebellious by his nature, and perhaps for that reason, he gravitates toward the peer group. Mm-hmm. He has lower self-esteem, less confidence, and he listens carefully to what they say, and he goes and does it. So you have a picture emerging here, you see, of a compliant child who is much easier to raise, not only at 2, 3, or 4, but at 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. They are just very different in nature, and we need to talk about the implications of that.
Well, does that mean then that the strong-willed child is more rebellious because the group usually is moving toward rebellion?
Many studies have shown, Mike, that the more peer-dependent a child is, the greater the problems that he has.
Well, I'm anxious to find out how that all progresses through the teen years and into adulthood and in the business world and in the home, how those temperaments affect the leadership role and so on and so forth. Let's take the compliant child as they move through the teenage years and into the business world beyond college. Are they the hard workers that become the CEOs, or do they maintain a lower-level position working for the strong-willed individual? What happens?
Mike, that question fascinated me, and I couldn't wait for the data to come back from USC. And I put it on my desk and started throwing pages open to find those charts to find out, because nobody knows that. In fact, I have talked to, probably 10 or 15 groups of parents about this, just kind of interacting with them, Sunday school classes I've taught, friends that we've gathered around. And I've asked that question, which group of individuals, the very strong-willed or the very compliant, do you think gets off to the fastest start in young adulthood? Mm. And probably 70 or 80% of the parents say the very strong-willed child. Mm. In other words, he's more assertive, he's more independent, he knows what he wants, and he goes for it. But the truth of the matter is, the compliant child gets off to a faster start.
Now that we've had all the background that you just shared in the last
few
minutes,
sense now,
you can see, sure, that strong-willed child is creating roadblocks and hurdles for himself.
The compliant child finds out what the boss wants and gives it to him, and the strong-willed child is still in rebellion. And there's resistance to the authority of the boss. Now, our study only went to 24 years of age. If it had gone to 40, or maybe even 35, I think we would have found that the strong-willed child would be the entrepreneur, the CEO, the president, the one who starts something, the one who pursues it. Now, I've been kind of wrong in my guesses to this point, and I may be wrong this time. But I believe the strong-willed child, when he becomes an adult, comes into his own and marshals that that great desire for his own thing to accomplish and produce things. In fact, there have been studies showing that CEOs, chief executive officers, and presidents have a different temperament and a different personality from those that remain vice presidents throughout their career. In other words, some vice presidents are on their way to become CEOs. Those who remain in a vice presidential role have a more servant attitude, and those who are presidents and CEOs tend to be more strong-willed and more independent. They want to run the train themselves, and there is a difference in temperament there. But we saw it in the early adulthood period.
Well, again, for the parent who has a strong-willed child, this is all sounding pretty discouraging, or at least it could, because the years ahead can be pretty grueling, especially if you're a parent who has strong desires for your child to really succeed, and you push. What hope do you hold out for those parents?
Well, first of all, Mike, we could talk about some of the liabilities of the compliant child. It's not as though we have good kids and bad kids, and I really want to stress that.
Yeah.
Yes, Virginia, it is easier to raise compliant children than it is strong-willed children. They're rare. I mean, there are fewer of them. But when you get one, life is easier for the parents. There's no doubt about that. But there are some other liabilities that they have. They have a much greater tendency to develop a dependency relationship. The relationship with the parents and the child is so satisfying for both generations that it is difficult for either the parent or the child to let go. And so it seems almost natural to continue to play an inappropriate parenting role into the adult years for that compliant child. The strong-willed child isn't going to let you do that. At 13, he's already saying, give me my way. And by 18, he is busting loose. You know, I mean, he is free. So there's a trap there. There are other factors about the compliant child. I'm concerned about the clock because we'll get into that in subsequent broadcasts, Mike. I want to say to the parents of the strong-willed child what we found that's probably the most encouraging. I have a feeling there's a need for encouragement right now. And that has to do with the acceptance or rejection of parental values. After all, in the long run, that's what really matters. You know, do the children come back to what you taught? Do they accept your God? Do they accept what you believe in your value system? Do they establish themselves eventually according to your model and your role? The critical issue is not whether or not they keep their bedroom clean without a fight. The critical issue is, do they come back to what you believe?
I have an idea. You're just about to talk to us about that proverb, raise up a child in the way he should go, and when he gets older, he will not depart from it, et cetera.
We found that true.
A loose translation.
Well, we found that true, Mike. In terms of the acceptance or rejection of parental values, we have the very compliant children, now grown, and the very strong-willed children, now grown. Uh-huh. And this is what we found. 79% of the very compliant children accepted the parental values outright. 5% rejected them. And 15% somewhat accepted parental values.
That's the compliant
child. That's compliant. Now, the strong-willed child, 53% of this most difficult category. You know, there are strong-willed children that weren't in this category. We're talking very strong-willed. 53% of those in early adulthood, less than 24 years of age, accepted parental values. So half of those before the kid gets out of adolescence. You know, he's just barely nosing over into adulthood. Half of those have already accepted parental values. And 32% have already accepted parental values somewhat. So 85% of those toughest of kids have come back more or less to the parental values before 24 years of age. Now, if you could check in with them at 35 or 40, it would be 90-95% and maybe higher. And if we were not talking about the strongest of the strong-willed, it would be higher yet. Of that 15% that reject parental values, they continue to be in rebellion and at 21, 22, 23, 24 years of age. There's probably another story there for that percentage. Mm-hmm. I would guess that of that 15% that just totally reject the parental attitudes and values in early adulthood, there was parental alcoholism or child molestation or, some element of disrespect engendered during the early days. Mm.
And your study dealt primarily with Focus on the Family listeners, so we're talking probably Christians, people who feel the same way that we do. It would be interesting to conduct that same study with people who don't listen to Focus, people who are non-Christians, perhaps, and see if the statistics hold up. That, at least, is encouraging news for the parent of the strong-willed child.
Yeah, what it boils down to, Mike, the upshot of this study is that the strong-willed child stresses his parent and irritates his parent and struggles against his parent's wishes. But if you do the job right, you get in there and establish your leadership early, you can deliver him into the hands of the Lord.
Well, that's where we'll end today's edition of Focus on the Family. You're listening along with me to a conversation that we've recorded, Dr. Dobson and I have recorded, dealing with his book, Parenting Isn't for Cowards, Dealing Confidently with the Frustrations of Child Rearing. We went on to say that if we covered the rest of the book, including the appendix, we could spend weeks dealing with the content. We will come back in a number of weeks with more on this subject, and I hope you can join us then. This program is provided regularly by Focus on the Family. Our website is simply family.org. Our managing producer is Jan Nations. Engineering and production are taken care of by David Salkeld and Steve Ryder. Our producer for the series is John Scott Welch. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.